Okay, listen up, everyone. Here's who's going to Florida. Kathy.
What?
Stanley.
No.
Ryan.
No.
Aaron.
And Jim.
You gotta be kidding me.
Okay. Okay. Florida group, welcome to the team.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 31. We're a few days into camp. We got Dan Duggan on the podcast, but first, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Go follow us on Twitter at EthanGSN, at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe to the podcast. We're on iTunes, Google Play, and now we are on Stitcher. So no excuses if you're not subscribed. You know that we're already on Audio Boom, so go check them out as well. Contests, stay tuned. They're in the works. I promise the preseason giveaways are going to be awesome. You guys are going to love them. So stay subscribed. Keep following us on Twitter because we will be posting updates about that shortly. Without further ado, let's get into it. We're joined by Dan Duggan. You can follow him on Twitter at dduggan21. He's the Giants beat writer for NJ Advanced Media. You can read him on nj.com. Dan, thanks for joining us. What's going on?
Yeah, no, my pleasure, guys. Just in the heart of training camp, the pads are on, so finally some football to talk about.
Definitely. We're excited. We've been itching for it, especially, I don't know if the people out there listening to last week's episode, we were relieved to finally be talking about football. Let's get right into it. Let's start with the big news of the day. Sterling Shepard, the injury, big scare for not only us, but the Giants organization. Just run us through the sequence, what you saw personally, and how everything progressed throughout the day.
Yeah, it was actually pretty unusual because, I mean, there's a million reporters at practice, and when a guy gets hurt, this, you know, you sort of kind of pick up on it whether you saw it or not. But this was at a time of practice where you really, your antenna wasn't even up for injuries. It was just like the early practice, individual periods. I thought they were going wide receivers, cornerback, but I was talking to Darius Powell after practice, and he said it was just wide receivers running routes on air. And so, again, I wasn't even paying attention to that, but somehow I noticed Sterling Shepard lying on the sideline, clearly, you know, in some sort of pain with trainers attending to him. It was far away from where the media was, too, so you couldn't get a great vantage point on it. But, you know, obviously, again, you kind of fixate on that. You realize it was Shepard. Looked like it was pretty serious. At one point, he tried to stand up and looked like he was having trouble putting any weight on his leg. So then the card comes out, and obviously, you know, anytime the card comes out, you know, kind of red flags go up. So he left the field. It definitely looked at the time like it was going to be something very serious. Even by the time McAdoo came to the podium, some reports had kind of leaked out that it didn't look that bad on the initial tests. And that's what McAdoo said. Looks just like a low ankle sprain, which is by far the best case scenario, because this is that time of camp where I think a lot of fans are probably just not wanting to see Twitter updates, because a lot of times it is so-and-so got carted off and is out for the season. I think I just saw that with Forrest Lamp. It seems like they really dodged a bullet. Even since then, Shepard has been on Instagram, basically, you know, like a praise God type of Instagram. I don't think you're doing that if anything came back bad in further tests. So it's just one of those situations where a big time scare, but in a matter of hours, which is kind of how things work, it's already been put to bed. It seems like I'm sure he's going to miss some time, and they're not going to, you know, rush him back. They certainly don't need to, but you know, 1 or 2 weeks in the preseason is a lot different than the type of injury that obviously was feared when he initially went down.
Yeah, I mean, it was Dan, thank you for joining us. It was pretty crazy at first. Everyone was kind of like, the reports of like him tearing up, and everyone just kind of braced for the worst. Personally, I kind of remember the whole Victor Cruz thing, but luckily it was not that. But I want to ask you, he's going to be out for a week, 2 weeks, maybe, you know, 3 weeks, who knows? But what are some guys that you think can step up with Shepard out, kind of get that opportunity to get more reps? Who are some of the guys that you think will get their number called more with Shepard out?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it should be a blessing in disguise for some of the younger receivers who are a little further down the depth chart. You know, when he initially went out, they moved Odell into the slot a little bit, and then Tavares King got more reps outside with the first unit, which he's been in the mix there all camp, but I think he would be the guy who's probably going to benefit most directly just from Shepard being out for however long that is. Dwayne Harris got some reps with the slot with the first team. He's a guy who probably doesn't need the reps as much. So it's more the trickle-down effect. The guy like Darius Powell, Roger Lewis, Travis Rudolph, those are probably the three main guys who I think will benefit. Not so much that they're going to step in and take Sterling Shepard's job, because again, we all expect Shepard to be back and play the same role he did last year, but these guys are going to get more of an opportunity in practice to run with the first team, more of an opportunity in the preseason in games, just because everyone's going to kind of bump up a peg. So I think those are the guys who, again, I don't think you're looking at who's going to replace Sterling Shepard, because I don't think they're going to have to do that, but it's just guys, every opportunity is so valuable, especially when we get to the preseason game. So those are the guys who I think kind of stand to gain the most for, you know, however long Shepard's down.
Yeah, and Shepard, a guy who I feel like went really under the radar. You know, when you play with Odell Beckham in that offense, you're obviously going to be the little brother, especially when you're playing slot, but had a very underratedly great year last year. And I think most of the reports coming out of camp, and correct me if I'm wrong, were that he was one of the guys that you could see a noticeable difference from year one to year two. What stood out the most amongst the, you know, him in particular for the first few days of camp?
Yeah, I mean, with him, I think it was actually more the spring, because we got to see him a little more, and the coaches obviously got to see him a lot more than even the media did. And it was just clear that he had made a jump, because he came in, had a good, solid rookie year, probably exceeded expectations for a second-round pick. I think there was an expectation like, oh, that's kind of who he is. But again, yeah, he is a rookie going into year two. He played a ton. He played 95% of the snaps last year. So again, you felt like maybe there wasn't as much room to grow. But in the spring, he just looked like everything he was last year, just a little better, a little bit more explosive, a little quicker. He's always had great hands and runs, you know, good routes. So that was all the same. So it wasn't like this is going to be, you know, everyone wants to always draw comparisons to Landon Collins. I think Shepard's baseline is a lot higher than Collins was after his rookie year. But he just looked like a guy this spring and a little bit early into camp, just poised to be a little bit better. And the other thing to kind of take into consideration with Shepard, he's probably not going to get the same amount of targets, same amount of opportunities, not going to play 95% of the snaps. So maybe his numbers at the end of the day won't be as good on paper, but I think he'll still be a guy who is going to make a big impact. There'll be games, I'm sure, where the coverages are going to be rolled more to the outside guys and he might go off. It just might not be as consistent, because I don't know if he's going to be as featured as he was last year when he was really the only other receiving option to Odell. Obviously, the Giants hope that they've changed that, but he still, I think, is going to be a better player. Whether or not that shows up in the box score, it'll help the offense if he's a better player.
No, fair enough. And, you know, we'll, something that we definitely want to ask you about probably in a little bit in regards to, you know, what the offense looks like with now with Evan Engram involved. But, you know, we're talking about Sterling Shepard going from year one to year two and all the improvements. We spoke pre-show for about a minute or two about our good friend Eric Flowers, and what looks like, based on a couple of videos that you had sent out, not much improvement. So my question to you is there anything that we're not seeing? Is there any reason for optimism? And did he shove you in the locker room after practice for posting those videos?
Well, I haven't seen him since I posted those videos, so I'll have to keep my head on a swivel. But Eric doesn't do a ton of media opportunities after his incident last year. So I don't know. Maybe I'll just keep, like I said, keep my head on a swivel in the locker room. But no, I mean, I don't think there is a lot of reason for optimism. I know some people have said it's a little unfair to highlight a couple of clips from the first practice, and that's a fair criticism, except it's the same stuff we saw all last season.
It's the exact same stuff. And to be fair, you did post that clip of him in run blocking, but that's right. Something that we knew that he was good at, was getting out in space. He's an enormous human being. So for him to get out in space and block, we knew he could do that. But we saw the same technique issues in those two videos that we did all last season.
Right. And it's not as if he got beat like a drum every rep in practice. But I'm not going to sit there and do a 18 clips. I mean, you're obviously trying to get a snapshot, and again, the negative ones stand out more, because in the game, the negative ones, I mean, that Dallas game last year at home, you know, people might say he had this terrible game. It was probably two snaps that were terrible, and then he was better in the second half. Well, it doesn't matter. Two snaps at left tackle can totally derail the offense and can get your quarterback killed. So that it's a bigger deal. You can't have a huge, you know, just complete breakdown like he's been prone to do. But yeah, see, I don't think there's a reason for optimism. And it's more of a, you know, fool me once, you know, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, because I bought into last year. I was new to the beat, and oh, this offensive line wasn't good in 2015, but it's all of a sudden going to be better, and the same guys are back, but just trust us, they're going to be better. And then they weren't. I mean, they weren't good in the preseason. Don't worry about the preseason. They're going to get better when the games start, and it just never happened. So then maybe gotten a little older and wiser, been around the team, and I just wasn't buying what they were serving in the spring about, oh, the fact that he worked out the facility and then he lost
slimmer,
the weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, those weren't his problems. I don't think anyone really ever said he didn't work hard, and I don't think he was someone whose weight was like so out of control that, like, oh wow, once he loses that huge gut, he's going to become a better player. I mean, it's always been technique. Now, I understand if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic, maybe being in better shape would help the technique breakdowns. But even at that, it wasn't like it was a conditioning thing. The Steelers game, he was having, he got a holding penalty in the end zone for safety. I think it was the first possession. It's not like it was only in the fourth quarter did he break down that Cowboys game. It was in the first half. So I just never bought into that. So I'm not saying I went out there looking today. If he was, knocking Olivier Vernon off the ball, I would have shown the clips. I mean, that was my plan, to just kind of highlight him and as the first day. But at the same time, we make a big deal when Eli Apple has a great couple of first days. So it's only fair to, if you're going to show the positive, you got to show the negative. And he's a guy who's obviously going to be in the spotlight because he's a huge piece of this team. A guy a lot of people want to see replaced or at least had someone bring in to challenge him. Jerry stood pat. And it's going to be a huge factor this season. So, like I said, I went out there today, wanted to get a look, and just stood out. Some of the same exact things we saw last year happening on day one. Maybe he'll get it fixed in the next 5 weeks, but I feel like that's the same people have been saying for the last 2 years. Oh, it's suddenly going to turn around. Until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. Call me a skeptic, but I just think that's the more prudent way to look at the situation.
Yeah, Dan, and I'm sort of like a victim of the blind hope. Early on, I just, I sort of kind of made every excuse in the book to kind of give him a pass. Oh, he's young. Oh, he has time to grow. Oh, he's injured. But I, as I told Ethan coming into training camp, it's all blind hope with not just Eric Flowers, but the entire offensive line. And I wanted to ask you about the offensive line as a whole. I mean, we saw Flowers, we saw his struggles, and I don't want to kind of, like you said, it's the same thing that we saw in the previous years. And give Olivier Vernon credit. He's a really good player, obviously. But there's really it's all blind hope when it comes to Eric Flowers at this point. But in particular, the offensive line as a whole, they did bring in DJ Fluker. They brought back John Jerry. What else can we expect from this offensive line? Can we sort of, okay, maybe Eric Flowers will still struggle, but what about the right side of the offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very similar to last year. I just don't think there's a great track record of guys making substantial jumps late in their career. Like John Jerry's probably, played better in the last year or two than he did maybe earlier in his career. I think he's a guy who maybe has kind of bucked that trend, but I think a lot of these guys kind of are what they are. I mean, Bobby Hart might make more of a stride than Eric Flowers because he's more of a guy who's a project, was a seventh round pick, really didn't get to play a lot till last season. So he's maybe a guy who that experience last year will benefit. And listen, if Eric Flowers just improves to mediocre, that'll go a long way. And I don't think anyone's expecting him to become a Pro Bowler. So if he just can make some strides, that'll go a long way. But I just think if you're counting on this offensive line to turn, who brings the same five guys back to be significantly better, I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Now, can they be marginally better, and can they be helped by the fact that you have a Red Ellison, you might have a fullback, you just have a more complete offense with the weapons they've added with Brandon Marshall and actually having a running back who can make a guy miss in the backfield? All of those things might combine to make the offensive line look better, because at the same time as last year, they get all the blame, but they were in a tough spot when you didn't have really any threats. They ran the same package every play, so defenses could kind of tee off a little bit. So it all kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, obviously we focus on this position or that position, but I think if you're just expecting this offensive line, these five players, to be significantly better in their own right, it's hard for me to find evidence to suggest that's going to happen. But again, maybe if the whole offense is just better and more balanced, then they won't be asked to do as much. I don't know. That's probably as far as I'll go as far as optimism with the O-line.
No, definitely. And, transitioning, I sort of want to transition from practice field into the locker room a little bit. There have been reports, what it seems to me, and maybe I'm a little off base here, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this year during practice, there have been a number of skirmishes, I'll say, between members of their own squads, between offense and defense, Pinkins in particular getting into the mix. And then you see the videos posted on Instagram and Snapchat. I like to think that the stuff on the field is just competitive. Do you think that this team has got to be one of the more tight-knit teams in the league in terms of how they get along and how much fun they're able to have while still putting in the work?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know, because, I mean, obviously I follow them so much, you know, more closely. I'm not following the Instagram of guys on the Chargers or the Broncos. But, I mean, I think that – and social media adds to that. You feel like this team's closer than past teams that maybe didn't put everything on social media. But, yeah, I think they're a close group. And I think to get to the guy who made this far in a podcast and not mention just the record is Odell.
Yeah.
I think the social media stuff lends a lot of support to the idea that he's very well liked in the locker room and that his teammates don't, you know, have ill will towards him for, you know, whatever he does that, you know, we all call a distraction. I mean, you just see this stuff. He's always in the middle of it. He's always having a good time. So I think that point says probably more than I think every team. I mean, I covered Rutgers football before this, and especially in training camp, guys blow off steam. They would do crazy things after practices. They had this thing called club ice one year where they turned the hot tubs basically into a club with strobe lights and, you know, all that stuff. So I think that's just, you know, young dudes are going to kind of cut loose, and it's not really a surprise. And as far as the fights on the field, I think the good thing about that is it does seem to be left on the field. We haven't had anything, because if it spills over into the locker room,
we don't have any DeMontre Moore is basically what you're saying.
Exactly. You know, and Gino's around, so you know, there's evidence of, you know, where things can get ugly. So
right.
Guys, you know, with helmets on, throwing a couple of jabs isn't the worst thing. I would say it's never a good idea to throw a punch at a guy in the helmet, but they never seem to learn that lesson, and they're just fortunate that, you know, Janoris Jenkins isn't have a hand in the cast right now after his ill-advised punch. And that was a first for me. I've never seen a fight
during wind
guys sprints. The same side of the ball during wind sprints. That was interesting. That was unique. I don't think Eric Pinkins has made a ton of friends in camp, but I think that's not the worst thing, because he's a guy who's fighting for a spot, and he's going to make the team because he's a physical, nasty dude, and he's going to have to play special teams. So, hey, if Janoris Jenkins doesn't like him, if Matt Lacoste doesn't like him, hey, who cares? You know what I mean? At the end of the day, he's going to be out there to go punish guys in different colored jerseys in 5 weeks. So,
and maybe even get him to the skin of some of the special teams guys draw a flag.
Yeah. So I don't think it's the worst thing. I mean, he played physical when he was out there last year. I know he had kind of a bad penalty in one game, but, you know, it's a fine line for these guys. But, yeah, as long as it stays between the lines, it doesn't get excessive. I mean, it's interesting. Belichick has a rule up there. I know that he kicks guys out to get in a fight.
Yeah, I saw that. Edelman and Gilmore.
So that's an interesting technique, because McAdoo's almost, I wouldn't say encourages, but doesn't seem too upset about it. He never, you know, he doesn't kick guys out of the next play, let alone practice. And then after, he always tries to downplay it. I think, again, it is part of it. These guys are super competitive. It's hot. They're hitting each other. It's, you know, tempers kind of flare. Guys are fighting for roster spots. All that stuff kind of adds up and makes it like a powder keg, and it goes off every now and then. I just think you don't want it to detract from kind of getting the work done. That was one thing I know McAdoo was getting a little frustrated about today, because, you know, there's only so much time, so many reps they have during a team period, and if half of it's spent with guys pushing and shoving and everyone having to separate and all that, it just kind of takes away from that. But for the most part, you know, circling back to your overall question, I think it's a tight group. I don't think the fights are anything alarming. I think the stuff in the locker room, especially when you can get Eli involved.
Eli dancing, you know.
You can't beat that. So, yeah, no, I think it's definitely good. It better be good at this point. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens when, you know, wins and losses have a long way to go towards determining chemistry. But I think the baseline is pretty good for this group right now.
Yeah, Dan, and you kind of brought it up, and I wanted to kind of get more into it. And that's the Odell Beckham Jr. factor, kind of the spotlight that's on him and how he's under a microscope. But I wanted to ask, you're around the team, you know, this is, you've been kind of been here for a while. The stuff that's kind of written, one thing I've realized is the stuff that's kind of written and said about Odell in the national media is much different than what the majority of kind of the local guys like you and other outlets say. But my question to you is Odell's comments, or is it really a distraction, like what some people say, or is it sort of like just everyone's trying to always take, because he plays receiver and because he's, you know, known for the catch and the hair and sort of how he's become sort of like a rock star, like Brandon Marshall says, is he a distraction, or is this sort of like, you know, being blown way out of proportion just because he's who he is?
Yeah, I mean, it's so complicated. I think Jerry Reese said it at one point. The way I would describe him is pretty perfect. It's lightning rod. It's not so much he's a distraction. And Odell said it when he spoke. It's everything he does blows up, whether he says something, doesn't say something, whether he does this, does that. Everything blows up. And that's a unique thing. I mean, you don't see it. I mean, you know, Brandon Marshall's been around forever and says, never seen anything like Odell in the league. It's just such a phenomenon. And it's everything you said. It's the catch. It's the hair. You also can't discount the Josh Norman game. That not too many wide receivers. You know, Antonio Brown doesn't have that on his resume. Julio Jones doesn't have that on his resume. It's, that stands out. And a lot of national fans are never going to forget that, and they're always going to hold it against them that, oh, look at, he's a punk, this and that. And he's got to, you know, he's got to live with that, because he definitely obviously lost his cool at the same time. That was, you know, it was 2 years ago now. But the way I look at it is the stuff he says, I don't think it's a distraction. I think players don't really care, and players like him. The stuff on the field, on the sidelines, I mean, his own head coach used the word distraction. I'm sure McAdoo probably would like to have a take back on using that word, because then everyone runs with it, and now we can all just justify and say, hey, McAdoo said distraction, not us. But then we get to apply it to kind of everything he does. I think some of the stuff on the sidelines can be a distraction, because if Adam Henry has to worry about calming Odell down, they're not preparing for the next series, stuff like that. But I don't think everything he does is as big of a distraction, you know, as it's made out to be. And again, I think at the end of the day, the important thing is what happens inside the locker room. So we can have as many headlines and back pages and fill up, you know, hours of sports debate shows about him, but if the guys in the locker room aren't getting impacted by that, then it really doesn't matter. It's just noise, and hey, we all have jobs to do, and you know, it kind of is what it is. I mean, it goes with being such a lightning rod, and he experiences the benefits of it. He wouldn't get that Nike deal if he was just kind of kept his head down and just played football. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys who put up good stats who don't sign the most, you know, lucrative contract shoe deal in NFL history. So it just cuts both ways. He seems to know how to always keep himself in the headlines. But again, I just keep going back to the fact that his teammates don't seem bothered by it. It's really swaying me more and more to say, well, it's hard for me to sit here and say it is a distraction when the guys in his locker room seem to 100% have his back. And then you also see him on the field, and he's just so good. It's like, yeah. It would be really hard for a teammate to really criticize him, because, like, you know, he's working hard. If he's not dogging it, because, I mean, he's just so talented. And it was funny, the first kind of real practice I had in camp, he just, like, completely dominated it. And it was, like, just a reminder. It's been a while since we've seen this guy play football. I've talked about everything but football. And then it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's, you know, that's why they put up with, you know, whatever they put up with, because he's just so freaking talented. So, but like I said, it's complicated. But at the end of the day, I just keep coming back to the fact that if he's still popular in that locker room, that's really what matters. Not so much what we all think on the outside.
Yeah. And it was one of the headlines that he created with the video about wanting to be, you know, the highest paid player in the NFL. I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you think he will be? You know, I don't think we really think that he's going to be the highest paid player in the NFL, but do you think he'll be the highest paid receiver in the NFL when his time comes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think especially just the way things are lined up, because Antonio Brown has, you know, just cashed in and set the market. So when it comes time, Odell, whether it's – I don't think it's going to be before the end of the season. Maybe things can change, but I'm thinking more likely next offseason. So by that point, he's going to be, what, 24, 25 years old. The cap will have gone up. I mean, he's going to probably blow Antonio Brown's contract out of the water, because everyone's going to keep, you know, raising the bar, and he's certainly in line to be the next guy to do that, because he's going to be able to – he should probably wait to see what Mike Evans gets and then blow that out of the water, because that's going to be beyond what Antonio Brown gets probably when you take age.
If you're Mike Evans, you should wait and see what Odell gets.
You know, it's a little bit of a dance, but either way, I mean, I think Odell will probably blow both of them out of the water so much it's really not even going to probably be a measuring stick. But I think he's going to really set the bar for receivers. I don't think it's unrealistic for him to be the highest paid non-quarterback, but it's just totally unrealistic to think he's going to, you know, jump over quarterbacks, just because that's, you know, that's how the game goes. That's how that position has always been compensated. But I think his contract is probably going to, you know, raise some eyebrows. I think it's going to be a lot bigger. Again, what Antonio Brown, I think, got 4 years, $68 million. I think Odell is going to be in the nine figures. I mean, say it's 5 years, I think it'll be, you know, $100 million or more. I think the guarantees are going to be a lot higher than we've seen for a non-quarterback. So, you know, I wish I could tell you exactly, you know, what those numbers will be, but as everyone has said, negotiations haven't even started. But just when you kind of set the bar at, I want to be the highest paid player in the league, you can guess that it's going to start pretty high, and then it's going to work its way back. But I think it'll still end, you know, at a pretty lofty price range.
Yep. Can't blame him for shooting that high, though.
Not at all.
Yep. Not.
All right. Transitioning from Odell back to a couple lesser known guys, Dan, sort of just rapid fire and then explain why. Who do you think is the biggest surprise so far in camp that's really stood out to you of the lesser known guys?
Oh, that's a good question, because there's so many guys who are back that were, you know, established parts of the team. So not a ton of guys like really coming off the radar. I think maybe just the fact that Michael Hunter has taken built on the spring and has been even better. I think he looks like he's going to be the fourth corner on this team. He's going to have to fight for Russ, but of course, you have to keep it up in preseason games. But I think he's ahead of Valentino Blake. I think he's ahead of Dante Dean, any of those guys. I mean, I think he's pretty clearly the fourth best corner on this team. And that's a guy who, you know, obviously got a cup of coffee last year and struggled, which is going to happen when you get thrown into the fire against Aaron Rodgers on Sunday Night Football. But spent most of the year in the practice squad. You know, you don't usually have high expectation for those guys, but he definitely took a leap and looks like he belongs. He's getting a lot of reps with the twos right now, but obviously that's one injury away from being with the ones. I think he's a guy who they need someone to step up there. And, you know, because you're going to have five corners no matter what, but you don't want them to just be bums. And I think Hunter has shown that he's a little bit better than what you might have expected when you kind of looked at this depth chart on paper in the offseason.
All right, so that's one guy on the defensive side of the ball. Give me one on the offensive side of the ball. I have one in mind who I've seen a bunch of the beat writers tweeting about, Darius Powell. Give me someone who you think from the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I put that out there, so that's definitely going to be my pick. I think he's been the most impressive, you know, outside of the Odell, Sterling, Brandon Marshall trio. I mean, he's probably been as impressive as any of them except for Odell, but obviously they're in a different category. Yeah. But he stood out more than Roger Lewis or Tavares King or like I said, Travis Rudolph, any of those guys. Not that those guys have had bad camps, but it just seems like every time you look up, Powell's making a catch. He's got a good body, a big guy, which, you know, obviously always is welcome for a wide receiver. He had a great camp last year. Didn't do a lot in the preseason game, so I think that's going to be the big determining factor if he's somehow going to. And it's a tough position because basically they return the same receivers as last year. You just sub out Cruz and put in Marshall. So it's not like there's a wide open spot like there is maybe for Hunter at cornerback. But he can make the decision tough if he keeps this up, because again, it's just every time you're doing team drills, I chart, you know, who has catches, and it's just pow, pow, pow. And a lot of it's with the second and third team. But he gets some reps with the first team, and you know, maybe a guy like Roger Lewis has to sweat a little bit, and you know, maybe that's where Lewis does more special teams. Probably going to have to show something in the preseason in that regard, because even if you make the team as a sixth receiver, they're not going to throw the ball in the regular season games. You need to be able to bring something to the table. But he's just the guy who has stood out, you know, in this first week. Has certainly turned some heads, and you know, is going to push a guy like Roger Lewis or push a guy like Tavares King, who I think is a little more solid, but still, definitely he's off to a great start.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about training camp, Dan, and you know, new faces and same people coming back. But in terms of the coach McAdoo, obviously, first year last year coming in for Coughlin after, you know, Coughlin's tenure here, a lot of changes, a lot of new faces, obviously with the three big free agents that came in. But now year two, what are some of the differences that you see from year one with McAdoo? Is he more comfortable? What changes has he made with training camp? Just what are your general observations from year one to year two?
Well, I mean, haircut aside, obviously,
slick Mac,
most drastic change. But I think even that kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that I think he is more comfortable. I think, you know, because you can be a great football coach, that doesn't mean you're going to be a great head coach in terms of the obligations you have outside of just X's and O's. Because I mean, those guys who are, you know, grunt assistants and then position coaches and offensive coordinators, they pretty much spent all of their days, you know, wearing sweatpants in an office, talking to other football coaches, and really don't have to do a lot of that unless it's, you know, some guys are more natural at it. And I don't think McAdoo is ever going to love standing up there and have us pepper him with questions at the podium. But I think he's a little bit just more comfortable in his own skin this year. I think going 11-5 in your first season has a way of making you more comfortable. And then he said that he's made, you know, he kept notes on everything they did last year and has made hundreds of changes. So there's no way I'm going to be able to notice every single one of those, because I think he's so detail-oriented, it's probably super minute. Like the third practice of training camp is going to be an hour and 45 minutes instead of 2 hours this year, something like that, that you know, you have no way of even picking up on. But they have made some changes that kind of stand out. I mean, just little things, like they don't just, every football team ever lines up, you know, 90 guys – in rows and stretch. They do it differently now. It's the linemen are on one side of the field, the skill position guys like the defensive backs and receivers are in one part, and then the kind of the combo guys like the linebackers and tight ends are in a different part. And they all have specific warm-ups and stretches they do. And just little things like that that I have to ask him kind of where he came up with that. But he's always kind of evolving. I wrote a story before camp that they had this enormous projection screen inside their field house, just takes up, you know, a big chunk of one of the walls, and they use that for almost like a interactive film study. So rather than sitting in the classroom, just, you know, watching a coach up at the screen, they're actually on their feet, and the screen is so big that it's almost like virtual reality. And they almost do, it's like a walkthrough / film study. I mean, I haven't seen them do it. I've only had it described, but just, he's always, it seems like he's always trying to find new little ways to, you know, make them better. I think you'd expect, like anything, he had a good first year, but I think you're going to be more comfortable, and obviously he would hope better in year two just because of that experience. I mean, you really can't prepare for that, and having to deal with Josh Brown and Odell and all the stuff you have to deal with last year, like he said, there's no manual for that. So I think, you know, you just kind of learn as you go through it. And I think there's, you know, plenty of reason to think that he'll be, you know, even better in year two, just as far as, you know, controlling, you know, all the different things that are going to, you know, crop up.
Yeah, definitely. And you sort of stole my next question there. As McAdoo's going into his second year, you see, you know, a few changes here and there. I think what makes McAdoo really special and sort of funny, especially in terms of social media and for writers, is that he's the perfect combination of, quote, football guy and new school coach, where one second he's in the meeting room telling a story about a lion that is now, you know, tearing it up with all the female lions at the zoo. And the next, he's sort of innovating all this new technology. So, you know, you mentioned the virtual reality screen, which I wanted to bring up. But also, I thought it was interesting that JPP was held out of practice. And I believe one of the reasonings was that they were using the GPS technology to calculate that JPP needed a break. So, you know, are there any other small new technologies that you see the Giants using in their second year?
Well, he keeps a lot of stuff close to the vest, so even if they are, he might not share with us. I know one thing they did, they hired a full-time nutritionist, which seems kind of odd that they didn't have one before. That,
yeah,
so I'm not
100%. Seems weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they at least had someone who was on staff. Maybe they're wearing two hats, or maybe they had someone who was part-time dedicated nutrition. I'm not exactly sure how that worked, but so they've definitely invested more in that. He's big into the sleep stuff. Not that that's new, but he said that that's impacted their schedule, where they'll start later some days just so guys get an extra hour of sleep. All that type of stuff. Yeah, he's definitely pretty proactive about, you know, adapting to new times. It's funny, you kind of forget sometimes, you look at him, he doesn't strike you as a young guy for some reason, but yeah, he's only 40 years old. So, I mean, he's not some old dinosaur. I mean, it makes sense that he's kind of, you know, on the cutting edge on some of the stuff. He just doesn't give off that cutting edge type vibe. But that was, then again, that was before the haircut. Now he's totally got a different image. But yeah, just overall, I think he's just very receptive to always trying new things and kind of evolving, you know, what works, what doesn't work. And he's not afraid to change.
All right, Dan, thank you for joining us. One question before you go, and it's definitely not too early for you to make a prediction on this only a few days into camp. Will the New York Giants win the Super Bowl?
Wow. I mean, if I'm just going to play the odds, I'm going to say no. I mean, I think no, you can just probably cut this part, but no, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just, like I said, it is a tad early. I think that they're certainly going to be in the hunt in the NFC. If you'd ask me if they're going to be NFC champion, I'd probably give you better odds. It's kind of tough to count out that team in New England. It looks like they're going for 19-0. But yeah, no, I think it's wide open. I mean, I don't think, you know, Atlanta, you know, won the conference last year, but I don't think anyone looks at them as, oh, how are we ever going to beat Atlanta? I think it's definitely a wide open conference. You know, the way that this team has added some pieces, you know, you would think they'd be able to build on last year and make a little bit more of a run in the playoffs. So, I wouldn't rule it out. But I just wouldn't I wouldn't etch it in stone just yet. I don't know if I'd be booking those trips to Minnesota in early February just yet, as much as you might want to spend some time out there.
Fair enough. All right, Dan, thank you for joining us. You can all follow him on Twitter at DDuggan21. Read him on NJ.com. He's got all your camp covered. Dan, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Thank you.